Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to the program, UFO Warning. In this episode, we're looking at Battelle and the UFO cover-up. That's correct, Battelle and the UFO cover-up. Now, in our last podcast, we talked about this company, the Battelle Memorial Institute, and how they actually run Oak Ridge Laboratory, the new home of Sean Kirkpatrick. So I thought, wow, this is weird. You have a nonprofit company running this government installation. Well, it turns out, I guess, they run more than just Oak Ridge. What's going on with these guys? They go clear back to 1929 when they formed, but even further back to 1923. So these guys have been around for 100 years. You have to wonder what kind of secrets they keep. Now, they list themselves as nonprofit. We'll look at the salaries of some of the people that run this thing. They're completely tied in with the government, forward, backwards, upside down. This is the definition of the deep state. And there's been questions raised about whether or not they have access to UFO metamaterial, you know, stuff from crashed UFOs, and right on down the line. If there is a UFO conspiracy to cover up their existence, these guys would have to be in the middle of it, in my opinion. Now, it just shows you how weird our country has gotten when you have these private corporations designed as nonprofits, they say, running large segments of our defense industry, large segments of anything you can imagine that the government does. These guys got their fingers in the pie. Why should anyone have that much power? This is exactly what I talked about when I mentioned last week about the founding fathers not wanting corporations to last more than 99 years. They said if you leave them intact, they'll get so big and so strong that they'll just end up consuming everything. They'll run you. And this is exactly what's happened. And we went from that, from our founding fathers, this collection, for all their faults, probably some of the most intelligent people the earth has ever seen, to what we have today, where the Supreme Court says that a corporation has all the rights of an individual. So one thing's created by man, a corporation, and we're going to bestow all the rights of a human on it. The other thing, at least according to the founding fathers, was put here on earth by the Creator. However you define God, this it's humankind created by this all-knowing being, okay? One supernaturally, one by man. What's going to happen? We're going to be enslaved by these things. This is a form of idolatry is what it is, where you give all the rights to an inanimate object that a human has. A human can be locked up if they kill somebody. What happens to a corporation? Well, they might pay a little fine. It seems like around the 1910s, 1920s, you begin to see these things imposed upon our government structure. And then we have what we have today, the deep state, where things are buried in ways where we could never access them with the FOIA. Now, I want to take a look at this first article here. This is from Wikipedia, and you could also go to Battelle's website. I found it to not be super interesting. Actually, a pretty simple website. You could probably create it in an afternoon. But I wanted to get to a little bit deeper into the subject, so I went to Wikipedia, and even though I know these guys a lot of times are affected by people who are on the opposite side of this whole UFO thing than us, sometimes you can get some kernels of truth out here and at least get some of the basic facts that are irrefutable. Now, they tell us that Battelle Memorial Institute, or simply Battelle, everybody seems to just call it Battelle, is a private, nonprofit, applied science and technology development company headquartered in Columbus, Ohio. The institute opened in 1929, but traces its origins to the 1923 will of Ohio industrialist Gordon Battelle, which provided for its creation, and his mother, Annie Maud Norton Battelle, who left the bulk of the family fortune to the institute after her death in 1925, originally focusing on contract research and development work in areas of metals and material science. Battelle is now an international science and technology enterprise that explores emerging areas of science develops and commercializes technology, and manages laboratories for customers. It has 3,200 employees and manages another 29,500 and 10 United States Department of Energy National Laboratories. So this company, they run almost 30,000 federal government employees. Our employees, who we pay, told what to do by a private nonprofit organization. Now, just going back to the beginning of this whole mess here, if we click on the link here to this Gordon Patel, it tells us Gordon Patel was born in Covington, Kentucky to Ohio industrialist John Gordon Patel. He lived from 1845 to 1918, and his wife, Anna Maud Battle Naquartel. He was named for his grandfather, prominent Methodist minister Gordon Patel, who had helped found the state of West Virginia, before dying of disease as a chaplain in the American Civil War. John Gordon Patel had become a pioneer in the steel industry as an owner of Columbus Iron and Steel Company. His wife, Anna Maud Norton Bell, was a suffragette. They married in Memphis, Tennessee in 1881, where John Gordon Patel had moved from Wheeling, West Virginia, to establish an iron manufacturing company. The family moved to the Cincinnati, Ohio metropolitan area, which included Covington, as John Gordon Patel established the Pica Rolling Mill Company and the Cincinnati Corrugating Company. In 1905, the family moved to Columbus, Ohio, where John Gordon Patel died in 1918. Anna Maud Norton Patel died in March 1925, outliving her son Gordon by 2 years. So this guy, these Patels, they came from money, okay? Old money. And he made his money in the steel industry. So let's just get this settled here. These guys, these steel magnates, if you know anything about the robber barons and the industrial age that started there back in the late 1800s, you know these guys, they worked their employees like dogs. I read Carnegie only gave his men 1 day a week off, had to work every day of the year but Christmas. These people were treated terribly. They worked in dangerous conditions, usually had no benefits whatsoever. When they couldn't work any longer, they'd throw them in the street. So he made his money off the backs of exploited labor. I don't worship these guys. I don't worship Andrew Carnegie and the Rockefellers and all the rest of them. A lot of them didn't pay income taxes. A lot of them really were never forced to obey any kind of federal law. They simply made their money off exploited labor. Now, sure, maybe they developed some new technology or they acquired it somehow, whether that was through blowing up somebody's oil wells or just strong-arming the competition. Most of these guys were not nice people. And you can tell they were not nice people by how they treated their employees. So then they amassed this giant fortune, and all of a sudden they're supposed to be worshipped. I don't worship them. And what's he do with this money? Well, he can't live forever and control people, but maybe he can create a corporation that can live forever and control people in its own really sort of demonic way, I think. Now, we go ahead, before I get into this a little bit, they call this thing a nonprofit organization. It says here they had revenues of just over $11 billion, net income $21 million, and assets of $896 million. Contributions, almost $10 billion. And then it goes, you can, I'll leave the links here. You can go check this stuff out for yourself. Just to kind of get an idea of the numbers that we're dealing with. Total assets, $1.5 billion. Total liabilities, just over $600 million. Net assets, just over $896 million. Employees, it says here, President and CEO Louis Von Thayer, $4,047,187 per year, plus income of $45,564 listed under other. $4 million for the CEO. It's nonprofit. Matthew Lee Vaughn, Executive VP Contract Research, making $1.868 million, with the other category of $50,000. Edward Grieco, Executive VP, $1.65 million. It just goes on down the line here. These top 20 or 30 guys are making the top. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are making over $1 million, with the CEO making over $4 million. And and then you kind of goes down from there. It's amazing to me. Nonprofit, $4 million a year for the CEO. And what are they doing? Well, you get a lot of gobbledygook when you read this stuff, but when you get right down to it, who knows what they're doing. Now let's take a look at this next article here. Just an idea here, talking about these guys. It says, memory metal files are missing. This is written by Billy Cox, published May 21st, 2009. With a boost from Sarasota resident Tony Bregaglia, the enduring Roswell UFO controversy is about to swing the spotlight onto one of the most successful research and development entities in America, Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio. At issue are some missing reports from Battelle's study of a nickel-titanium alloy called nitinol, renowned for its resilience as a memory metal. Wow, doesn't that sound familiar? Contracted by the U.S. Air Force to assess and exploit its compelling properties in the late 1940s, Battelle participates in or manages six national laboratories for the U.S. Department of Energy, including Oak Ridge, Lawrence, Livermore, and Brookhaven. So where all the good stuff's at, you're going to find Battelle there. The problem is, neither Battelle nor the U.S. Air Force can produce copies of what scientific literature refers to as the Second Progress Report on contract AF33-0383736. Bregaglia suspects that's because the data is still highly classified due to its source, a flying disc that crashed outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Well, you gotta wonder, they are reported to have been investigating memory metal in the late 1940s. And what happened in the late 1940s? Well, Roswell, they told us to begin with that it was a flying saucer crash. And they described the metal as memory metal. And guess who's right there on top of it? Battelle. Personal testimony is one thing, says Bregaglia, whose research skills have been polished by his business as an executive search consultant. But when you start talking about documents and the history of science, unlike testimonials, their provenance is not questioned. Bregaglia's work is showcased in a just-released update of Witness to Roswell. It's a new book here. It says by Tom Carey and Don Smith. Now remember, this is written in 2009. Bregaglia says his curiosity about the Roswell debris began accelerated in 2007, shortly after a retired Army officer, veteran from Ellenton, named Ben Games, told DeVoid a tale that no one had ever heard before. In July of 1947, he flew General Lawrence Craigie to Roswell during the furor over the alleged UFO recovery. As chief of the Research and Engineering Division at AAF headquarters, Craigie had offices at the Pentagon and at present-day Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. In October 1947, he became director of research and development for the U.S. Air Force. At the end of the year, he authorized the first-ever U.S. Air Force study of flying saucers from 1948 to 1950. He served as commander of the U.S. Air Force Institute of Technology at Wright-Patt. In 1991, retired Brigadier General Arthur Exxon confirmed the author, investigators Smith and Kevin Randall, that Roswell debris was transferred to Wright Field in 1947. Interesting. Ohio? Battelle, Ohio. Civilians and military personnel who handled the stuff compared some components to aluminum foil, except that it would conform to its original shape after being crumpled. Wow. Exxon, a lieutenant colonel on base at the time, said lab chiefs in charge of testing the material knew they had something new in their hands. The metal and material was unknown to anyone I talked to. However, Exxon, who was promoted to Wright-Patt Base Commander in 1964, never had access to the debris. But who did? And if, as skeptics contend, the thing that went down in Roswell was simply a classified but hardly exotic balloon project, why did Craigie make a hurried flight to New Mexico from Washington? Either nitinol, which made its debut in 1939, the nickel-titanium metal, which was created as a byproduct of another project and initially studied for its crystalline structures, Bregaglia was unable to find any research on its shape, recovery properties, until encountering references to a WPAFB contract with Battelle produced in 1949. Well, that's what they want to do. They want to get this high-tech, these new discoveries, this new evolving technology, and capture it. Because if they can capture it, then they can use this new technology to continue to control us. Its second progress report, authored by Battelle employees, listed only as CM Craighead, F. Fawn, and L.W. Eastwood, implies a first progress report for which Bregelia could find no references at all. Although unable to get his hands on the second progress report, Bregelia lists four references to its existence in 1952, 1965, 1972, and 1984. Bregelia didn't read the second progress report because nobody appears to know where it is. Kimberly Lang, manager of the Battelle Library, couldn't find a copy, and neither could Annette Shepherd, special collection librarian of WPAFB. Lang reconfirmed to DeVoid her futility at learning anything about the 60-year-old project beyond published references to it. Well, nothing to see here. I guess that just resolves that. There's something strange going on here, but there is no copy of the contract, and Wright-Peterson doesn't have it either. Evidently, it was never submitted for retention, says Lang, who coordinated her search efforts with WPAFB. Both sides have miraculously lost their copies of it. Imagine that. Somebody says, hey, we got a contract to study this memory metal. We think it might come from a UFO. There's a contract for it. Okay, well, let's go find it. Nope. Nothing to see here. This is how they play you. And how people can think these guys are on the up and up, it's beyond me. It goes on and says, I don't know what's in it. I don't have a clue. I don't think there's anything malicious going on. But it's kind of my open file now. It's a mystery. Yeah, just like the Kennedy assassination. Don't know what's in the files. Trump says that it's really bad. We shouldn't even want to look at it. But, you know, I'm sure there's nothing malicious going on. Bregelia doubts the U.S. Air Force farmed out the actual Roswell debris to Battelle. More likely, he suspects, his scientists were tasked to simulate its morphing abilities through nitinol, which requires 99.99% purity in the application of the heat. Yeah, you really think that the very best scientists are going to be working for the military when they can go in the private spec sector and probably make 10 times as much? Yeah. Hard to believe the Air Force would ever farm anything out. Oh, no, that would never happen. Curiously, Bregelia says military reports announcing the unveiling of nitinol as a memory metal cite every year from 59 through 63 as his point of discovery. The last word from the U.S. Naval Ordnance Lab lists his debut as 62 or 63. Well, they got to seed confusion into this. That's called developing multiple parallel narratives. That way you can just confuse the enemy, which is us. Today, nitinol has blossomed into the commercial sector, finding its way into everything from medical hardware to bendable eyeglass frames. Among the most ambitious firms incorporating the latest the latest generation of metallic elasticity into a vast array of products is Liquid Metal Technologies, a publicly traded R&D company headquartered in Rancho Santa Margarita, California. Attributing its amorphous alloys to researchers from the California Institute of Technology, managed by Battelle in cooperation with Lawrence Livermore Liquid Metal's website, says it's collaborated on numerous shuttle missions for NASA scientists to study its technology and space firsthand. So here you go. You have a new R&D company, you have a major university here, and you've got the federal government, and you've got Battelle. So that is the ingredients for a deep state. Private companies, major universities, federal government, and nonprofit like Battelle. And Battelle apparently is the big boy. The NASA connection is huge, says Bregelia. When you begin taking stuff into space and testing it under microgravity conditions, it allows you to develop material of exceptional purity. Battelle, listed as a charitable trust exempt from taxation, is most famously known in UFO circles for producing a 1954 Air Force Project Blue Book study called Spatial Report Number 14, concluding that 21.5% of UFOs in the military databases were unknowns. Battelle directly contradicted then U.S. Air Force Secretary Donald Querry's assertion that only 3% of the sightings were unknown. Battelle is very artful at concealing its connections, says Bregelia. When people say the government knows about UFOs, I wonder, especially when you consider that Battelle has more or less privatized 6 of our national laboratories. Now, if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what will. 6 of our national laboratories. So when people want to make snide comments to me about being a conspiracy theorist because I believe that there's such thing as a deep state, they can go pound sand. We can see right here what's going on, what's been going on since 1923. This didn't happen last week. This didn't happen yesterday. We are reaping the fruits of people who started out in life as individualists, these steel magnates, these railroad magnates, the oil magnates, they were allowed to exploit and abuse labor at a rate not seen since Pharaoh. They collected the profits from all of this stolen labor. They amassed fortunes in the millions and millions, what today would be billions of dollars. And then suddenly, they weren't individualists anymore. They wanted to be collectivists. They wanted to collect everything and then tell us how to live our lives. And they pretty much did. They collected all this wealth. They left giant trusts, not necessarily to their kids, although their kids mainly were left pretty well off, but they left these trusts to control us from the grave. It wasn't enough that they were able to exploit labor and steal the wages of so many working people, the very livelihoods of these folks, the happiness of their life taken because they had to work 6-7 days a week for just slave wages. That wasn't enough for these people. They were so greedy, they wanted to take that money they'd stolen from us, and instead of just leaving it, I guess, on the planet to be dispersed after they leave this world, no, not good enough for them. They wanted to create these corporations, untaxed corporations, untouched corporations, where we could be controlled by them. Long since dead, 100 years ago, dead. Yet this guy's corporation is still controlling us by taking control of these different national laboratories, by controlling the data and the knowledge and everything else. It's insidious. And this is why the founding fathers said, don't let these corporations live more than 99 years. You will become a nation of slaves. They couldn't have been any more right. So when you come across these stories about the UFOs and the conspiracy theories and all the rest of it, it's not just the government. It is your government working with these major universities, these private companies, and these nonprofits to control all of the knowledge, all of the data. And believe you me, if there's a wrecked UFO somewhere, they've got it too. Until next time, this is UFO Warning, over and out.